Lift those searchlights up on the tower. Right now. Move! Move!
I listen to 2ARM, 92.1 FM, in the car and at work, for great tunes and community news.
Hello, I'm Herb, and this is Community Spotlight. Today I've got the spotlight on Tess Cullen, a local resident. Good morning, Tess.
Good morning.
Now tell me, Tess, you are a resident of Armidale?
Yes.
And how long have you been a resident of Armidale?
I'm a new person, well, 8 years.
8 years.
Yeah.
So let's start right at the beginning. And we had a bit of a chat off air about your journey with art, for a start. You're currently the president of the Armidale Art Society.
Yes, that's right.
In Armidale. Yep. And that gallery's down in the mall.
Yep.
So tell me, right back to the beginning, Geelong is where you were raised.
Geelong, down by the south coast in Victoria, Wathaurong country. And, yeah, I lived there until, well, for most of my childhood with quite a gap where we went travelling overseas for about 3 years. So from up till about 20, I probably lived in Geelong, yeah.
And you told me that your mother was an art teacher.
My mother was an art teacher, yes. We were a single-parent family in the days when there weren't any. Her wage was a third of, or two-thirds, was it, of the male wages, and yet she was the single breadwinner. And so she was a staunch advocate for equal rights and women's issues.
Excellent. We support that wholeheartedly here at 2ARM, I can assure you. Now, tell me, though, the travelling and the art, how does that sort of fit with your mother and your family?
Art was the kitchen table. So every time my mother had a new idea of what to teach, we experimented around the table. So that was sort of a normal practice. Plus, I grew up thinking I never read books. I read comics, totally into comics, you know, and Superman, what was it, The Phantom, those sort of comics, Phantom, yeah. Totally. But, and later I realised, actually, I didn't read books, novels, I read art books. I would sit down with art books and look at all the pictures and read the captions. So I knew my art history really well when I was a really young person. So I was my mum's offsider, you know, sort of correcting the Greek art paperwork that people did, because she liked art, the theory of art. So she taught a lot about that. And then as life went on and being a single parent, she decided that life was not interesting enough at home, and a comment from her work spurred her on to deciding to become a teacher in Canada because they were calling out for teachers. And that began, and I would have been 12 when we left, 11 when the decision was made, and 12 we took a P&O liner in the days when that was the cheapest form of travel, and we travelled, and our cabin was under the waterline. It was cheap. 3 weeks later arrived in Canada after stopping off in China and Japan and Hawaii, and so, you know, each of we children, you know, discovered different things from that, but it was great, you know, just an amazing trip. And then we landed in Canada and kept travelling until Mum found a job.
And where in Canada did you reside when she got the job?
We ended up in Alberta, Edmonton, which is the capital of that, which is the second province in from the western side, and not too far from the Rockies. So our pastimes became skating and skiing, and, you know, the two-hour drive to the Rockies was our weekend jaunt. And being Aussies, it's like, okay, let's go. And we hung out in youth hostels and learnt to ski and walk in the snow.
Did you get much exposure to the Indigenous people of Canada?
No, not where we were. We're in a city. And that's, you'd have to go much further north at that time to really encounter that.
So when you came back from Canada, how old were you?
We went via, but we went via England and lived there for a while.
Oh, okay.
And we also went via Europe and every sacred site and art gallery you can imagine. And I came back when I was 15.
Right, and where did you reside then?
Back to Geelong, back to the house we grew up in, and it felt like a doll's house, half the size of when I'd left, because I think that's what memory is like, isn't it? When you're younger and you come back, you're a bit older and everything's smaller.
But that trip away must have really added to your artistic journey.
Artistic knowledge, absolutely, because I probably spent 3 years walking through galleries, being looking at everything. And it seemed, of the four kids that we were, that I was the one who was my mother's offsider on that, the one who kept looking, who kept asking. So it was like an education. You want to do it's like a 3-year degree in art of the world, particularly the classics. So, and architecture and sacred, ancient sites. And, ancient sites. Loved ancient sites.
I think when I went to Turkey, when my wife and I were first married, that's what really blew me away about historical sites. All the sites in Turkey were just fantastic.
Yeah, I think the ones that blew me away first was when we were living in Canada. We did a 2-month journey down through the States and down to Mexico, and we went to Aztec temples. And I mean, they're the ones that really, it was like, that's where I think a true love of ancient sites began and ancient cultures.
So you came back to Australia, went to Geelong, back to the house where you were
back
born.
Back to Geelong, yes.
And when did you leave and where did you go then?
Ooh. Well, I kept coming, did high school. Then as a continuously restless soul who didn't quite know what she wanted to do, I then just travelled all over Australia for about 3 years, hitchhiking mostly in the days. Didn't come north because that was scary, went west. So into the desert lands, lived in all sorts of small coastal towns, never particularly a city girl. So quiet places, but you get a job, you know, stay for a couple of months and off on the road again.
Now, you told me off air that you came to Bellingen at some stage as a 20-year-old.
Oh, no, much later than that. Let me think. I don't know. But the kids were, I had 2 children along the way, and after some years back in Geelong, I got to Bellingen, I don't know, mid-90s, after a few other places along the way.
And what did you do at Bellingen?
Oh, Bellingen felt like I found a community that totally fitted. Like, it was a really comfortable place for me to live. And with my cousins, we'd bought a house property there. And I moved away from, been living way in the bush on an MO, living on that sort of subsistence level where, you know, we had solar power, water from the creek and the dam, that nothing, totally off the grid for about 4 years. So then I got to Bellingen and we had, gosh, electricity, all those things. The kids went, television, oh my God. And also, because I was such a restless soul, my kids said to me when we got there, they said, Mum, can we go to the same school next year? And so it was like, oh, and I went, that's right. So we stayed there for about 5 years and the kids went through primary school and began their high school years there. What I did was I ended up teaching a lot of art because I painted a lot in those days and also worked with pastels, and I could make money through teaching that. So I taught a playing with colour, which was like an art therapy class. I taught people how to do portraiture. Because my background had been, I went and studied with a portrait artist at Geelong Fine Arts School, and I did a 3-year course there on realistic painting and with oils in those days. And then when I got to Bellingen with a lot of people, and they'd say, oh, I can't paint, oh, I can't draw, oh, I can't do this. And it's like, actually, anybody can. It's just about confidence. And we tend to have a culture that doesn't promote art in a way, well, it's not sport, is it, basically? So there's a certain playing as a child and then it gets lost through school and people think they can't. But many have a passion for creativity, colour, representation. Even the meditation of just playing with colour is a really nourishing thing to do. So I sort of ran classes basically for a group of friends. That's how it really started, who just had this negative mind self-critic, and to turn that around and bring the artist out. And then I probably continued that for the next 10 years.
So you're talking about astrology. You've always loved stars, you said, but
yes.
Where did you get right into astrology?
Well, that was in Bellingen, and I really believe it began in the mountains of Canada when we're staying in a youth hostel And there were these, you know, I was young, what was I, you know, 14, something, maybe 13, something like that. And there were these young uni students there, and one of them was an astronomer. And we would go out and lie in the snow in the night in these crystal clear stars, and he would tell the stories of the stars across the skies. And I you know, I think that's where it sparked. And then when I, after I'd come out of the bushland, which felt like an early retirement in life, and then I came back to the world, I thought there was a few things I wanted to do. Learn astrology was one of them. Learn something to do with healing was another, and continue with art, of course, was a third. And although that had never really stopped. So I found a teacher and I studied for about 3 years. I think I read an entire library of books. A lot of it's about psychology. So you go down the track of Jungian psychology as well, mythology, and then the historical aspect of art. And I probably kept studying on and off for, I don't know, 6 or 7 years, I'd say. But I started teaching along the way as well, because I think the cup gets so full it starts overflowing. And as a people person, and I was already teaching art, it was sort of a natural overflow again and a way of making money as a young person.
You mentioned healing. Now, Chinese massage, was that the healing?
Yeah, I did. I took up, did started with remedial massage, but ended up with a massage called Qigong, an acupressure massage, and in through that learned a lot about Chinese herbs. And so it was more a matter, and I dabbled into homeopathy and a few things, but it was more for self-health and for also bringing up children. And so I had quite a basket of alternative, what you'd think of as first aid. I could look after it without having to go to doctors. I'd been in hospital a few times as a kid and a teenager and had a bit of an aversion. So anything to keep me away from a doctor or a hospital, I went down that track. And thus, I brought the kids up pretty well completely without any intervention.
So Bellingen, when you moved to Glen Innes, Waitalaba?
No, I moved from Glen Innes and Waitalaba to Bellingen.
Okay, let's go back to Waitalaba.
So I went from Victoria and I went to Waitalaba. Now, I ended up there.
What is Waitalaba first?
Oh, Waitalaba is a large MO.
MO, what's an MO?
Multiple occupancy property east of Glen Innes, down the hill, in the first valley of the Tablelands. It started years ago. I'd been there in those travelling hippie days, stopped there for a while before they'd bought the property, decided it wasn't my bag. I thought 300 people couldn't make a decision in one go. I left, but my cousin bought into the place. And then many years later, I was travelling north and I called in. Now, what actually happened was that during that time, my mum died in Victoria. And so I wasn't staying there. And then I had to go back to Victoria, and I was probably late 20s. So I went back to Victoria and dealt with that. And that came back and forth a bit, took about a year of my life, and then eventually sold up everything down there and sort of landed back at Waitalaba. And then I stayed there for 3 years as my sort of retreat, recovery from grief, and kind of quit the world, I think, at that point in time.
And what made you come back to the world, so to speak?
Waitalaba was an interesting place in those days. It was a bit redneck, a bit run by the boys and a bit strong arm, and didn't suit the woman in me. And also I thought the kids needed a broader education, so we came back out, and that's when we moved to Bellingen, which was a fantastic choice.
So Lismore and Byron Bay has sort of been in your past as well. Tell me about that.
Well, that's where I eventually landed. So after Bellingen, my life took me to Lismore, and that's where the kids finished high school. And I continued teaching the art, teaching astrology there. And eventually, after moving around a bit, ended up in Byron, which I thought I would never live in because, of course, as an outsider, you visit Byron and it's this frenetic, hectic place, but there was a flat came up, a small sort of a half house, and it was very affordable. So it's an odd thing to say in Byron, but it was very affordable. And so I moved in there and discovered the underculture of Byron, the locals, and I started working at the community centre there. And so I stayed, it's about 12 years, I think. I worked down at the community centre in various roles, started with the theatre as stage manager and ended up as the market manager because I decided at that point in life that I preferred early mornings to late nights. It's about as simple as that job. And the markets was my dream job, running the markets, because it was eclectic in its nature. There was many arms to it. One had to be organised, love organising things. The event manager part of me, that was easy to run things. But it was also about people. It was so much about people. So you'd meet people who'd been doing it for years and you'd learn from them. You'd find people who wanted to start things, so you'd help them get on in life. People had brilliant ideas, and Marcus was full of, had one of the best things. It was absolutely full of really creative, eclectic, different people who didn't quite fit the mainstream often. But it was also full, those people, amongst there were also many, many what I call mavericks, people who just were against whatever system was going, sort of anti-people. So it was a battle between creativity and keeping the peace. But I had a fantastic team, and I started with 14 markets a year, and slowly by the time I left as the manager, I had over 60 markets going because we developed a weekly night market in the local park, artisan only and local only. And so that was a small, lovely place to go for dinner every week and have some music in the main street from October through to Easter. Just delightful. And then someone else had a market and they couldn't run it anymore, so we took it over. And it used to be once a year, a Christmas market, and we did it four markets a year on the beachfront, or not quite the beachfront, on the grassland just behind the beachfront. And that was also an artisan market. So we were then promoting all the local artists, all the people who did their own thing, made their own thing. I mean, one had to check stuff out a lot because people would sneak all sorts of stuff in, but mostly was the creatives. And I just loved it. You know, it was a never-ending job of change. So you'd sit at a desk a bit, but you'd also walk miles. One day at a market, you have those the fit things where they clock how fast you go and how many steps. Well, one day I must have walked so far, because the beach market was a very long market strung out. I was walking so fast it told me I'd been riding a bike.
So just tell me, there's a couple of things that I want to get to before our halfway point. One thing is, when you left the market, you were manager of the markets.
Yeah.
Did you hand that on to somebody that you'd trained up?
Yeah, my 2IC took over as
fantastic.
They then went looking for the next person.
I think that's the important thing. When you've got somebody successful, you need to be able to be training somebody up to take that over, so it's actually going to go from strength to strength after you've actually put all that effort in. One of the things that interests me is that night market idea and how we've got the mall in Armidale that's pretty dead, has been dead for a while, and some of those types of things might bring back a bit of life.
Well, a lot of it's about food. And today we have the food in Armidale. When I first came here, it was sausage sizzles at the markets. That's all you found. Now we have delicious foods from all over the place. Lots of, like, I go and every Sunday I do the markets at the gallery. So I'm there in the morning. I have samosas first thing, and then I finish it off with a delicious falafel roll and take that home. And that's my food for the day. It's fantastic.
And that speaks a lot about what we are with our cultural diversity here.
Yeah,
our
diversity is growing. Absolutely. It's fantastic. Yeah.
And we need to probably take full advantage of that and see where we can plug that into revitalising them all.
And we then are supporting like the local businesses. It's the local economy. It's the local people. It's the small businesses. If we put time and energy into that, it creates community, and there's a feel about that, like when they do have events down the mall, there's hundreds of people who come out, and you think, where'd they all come from? So if that could be harnessed properly, it could be quite amazing.
I think you're right, is that people do have a thirst to get out and do things.
And explore.
And explore and just trying to find, provide those opportunities for them. You know, it's almost like make it, they'll come. But if you provide the opportunity, people will come out to do it. So the other thing I wanted to talk about, and you did mention it back in Canada when you're lying on your back in the snow looking up to the stars, there was a guy that was an astronomer.
Astronomer.
And you studied astrology.
Yes.
Tell me the difference between the two, because I think people who are listening would be going exactly like I am. What's the difference?
The difference is, well, astronomy is the study of the stars. It's a more modern science. Well, it's an ancient science, but it's a modern science. But it's the practical physical aspect of the stars and where they are. So it can go all the way back to ancient times because the naming of them, and of course we've got hundreds of monuments across the world that have been built because of them. So that all fits in with astronomy, which is the practical physical side of it, from how it began to where it's going. Whereas astrology is completely different in that it uses the model of the naming system of the stars to create a different model of who we are and what our soul print is, our soul blueprint. So it can help people understand who they are. It has also evolved over from Egyptian times through to Greek the Mesopotamian to the Greek to the medieval to the modern. And the modern psychological astrology was probably developed in about the 1800s it began. And it's sort of grown through there. So it takes mythology. So if you've ever done Jungian psychology and you understand archetypes and, say, dreams and how your dreams have meanings that are true to your unconscious, and if you can unravel them, particularly when you're struggling with some concepts or times, you can then actually get clarity and insight about the deeper workings of your unconscious, and astrology goes there.
What we might do, Tess, this has been totally exciting, and we've jumped all over the place, but that's great. I hope people listening find it interesting. I'm finding it interesting. Let's have a little break. You can have a glass of water and we'll get back to it soon and talk about Armidale.
I listen to 2ARM, 92.1 FM, in the car and at work for great tunes and community news.
And you're back with me, Herb, and Community Spotlight. I hope those that are listening have been as interested as I have with Tess Cullen. Welcome back, Tess.
Hello again.
Hello again. Let's jump to moving from Lismore, Byron Bay and the markets to Armidale. You've been here 8 years?
8 years, yeah.
And what do you do in Armidale?
I'm going to start with I came to Armidale because of family. One, I was a bit burnt out with my job, so it was time for a change. And my daughter lives here with her children, and one of them became ill, is a simple way of putting it, and I came up to support her. But I then thought, well, I'll stay, you know, a couple of years, we'll see what it goes. But luckily, within it took a while because I was a bit burnt out, so sitting by the fire was a delight. I got myself a good job, and that really allowed me to stay here and put down roots.
Tell us about that job.
Okay, job's out at the university at the Urala Aboriginal Centre, and I started off as an event manager for their 30th anniversary, and so we put on about 18 events. I mean, I probably did about 7 of them, and others were umbrella events that we put under the banner of over about 3 or 4 months in 2017. And then after that, I stayed on, and then eventually they made me permanent. It's a fabulous place to work. I mean, it's been up and it's been down and it's been interesting, but for me it's been educational because I've been deeply involved in the Indigenous community, local and the student community, and I feel like, again, it's been a great learning curve for me to understand a lot more about cultural knowledge, cultural liaison, and also the helping the Indigenous student succeed is so important. The more I've learned, the more important I understand how it is. And it's great because we're a small community within a bigger community, And it's also because of the job, irregardless of the content of the job. No, I wouldn't have stayed with the job if I didn't like it. So I like the job a lot, and it's versatile, and I get to play with art even at the university. I've put on a few art exhibitions out there and I've helped a little bit with the art stuff. So I get to play in a few different worlds. But because of the job, I could buy a house and put down roots and, you know, share a house with my daughter and my granddaughters. So it's a really sense of family. And my son lives here too with his partner and child. So it's a very... Which when I lived down the coast, of course, one has that time when you're a bit on... Well, I ended up a bit on my own. And I thought, it's just nourishing to be around family. So the job gives the security. The content of the job, of course, because it keeps being interesting, I keep staying, and family is nourishing.
So you did mention art, and just on that note about your job, must be very rewarding to see, to help students, Aboriginal students, Indigenous students through their study at the UNE.
Well, I get to, mostly what I get to do is write their stories. I write art because for media, and we started off when I was there, when I started, there was maybe one or two, maybe one Indigenous story put out about a successful student in a year. Now we write 30 to 40 stories in a year. We tell all sorts of stories, and thus you get the insights into people's lives. And we run all sorts of events for the new ones coming in and graduations. We've got sashing ceremonies in 2 weeks' time, so I helped organise those. And we've got, 25 Indigenous graduands coming in and their families to celebrate the amazing milestone. So we put on a special family, formal but informal celebration. And that's the bit part of the job that I just love.
All right, art. So you do a bit of art there, but you also are the president of the Armidale Art Society.
Yes.
How long have you had that position?
Well, absolutely. They came in together, the two jobs. So I joined the Art Society when I came to Armidale, I think that was 2016. So by the end of... I just joined it because I needed to do something. I like to get involved in community, and so it's good to choose what it is you want to get involved in. So I went down to the Art Society. They were very welcoming, and so I became part of the team. And then I think even within a year, I became the president, mainly just because the fellow who had been the previous president said, oh, you could do this. I said, oh, come on, there's got to be someone else. He said, no, I think you're the one. And so I said yes to that, and it was about a month after that I got the job at the university. So it's been busy ever since.
So you told me that moving the Art Society gallery, now the gallery is in the mall.
Opposite the post office.
Opposite the post office. So it used to be upstairs, and that was always a bit of a bane in everybody's existence in that trying to get up the... Getting up the stairs. So it's a ground level now. And you told me off air that really that was the big improvement.
It's an amazing improvement. Of course, upstairs was great and it kept going, but it was becoming less successful because it was so hidden and out of the way. And also, old people can't get up those stairs. No disability access whatsoever. And passerby traffic, not much. So actually, it was due to Renew Armidale, who started up trying to fill all the shops in town. So talking with them, there came up a shop that was just straight downstairs from where the gallery was. And so I said, oh, we'll have that. So talked everybody into it, and we moved down there. I can't even remember when, but it was a few years ago now. It was during COVID. That's when it was. It was sort of, I think, the very end of COVID when we came back out, when we were coming back out in the world, or the end of that first year. That's when it was. So we opened up. We quickly set up this little gallery because we could afford to have a downstairs spot while still paying rent upstairs because of the lease. Now it was incredibly successful. The traffic through the gallery tripled within days. The sales went up. It was very small, that shop, and so we had to sort of minimise exhibitions, and there was much less we could do. But it proved the point that being down on the ground with shop front on the mall and accessible made for a much better business.
So it's almost like you trialled both places and found that the ground floor was there and street traffic was important. So you moved across the road.
Mm. So we moved into the old Reader's Companion building that had been left empty. It's owned by local people who were very happy to have the gallery in there, which was delightful. And so we, you know, painted it, we cleaned it, we did working bees like crazy. And lots of people came on board. The Demerick Lions Club, they were brilliant. They came and helped us paint the entire joint. Some people gave us paint. It was really quite a community effort. And then, you know, half a dozen working bees later, we were set up in the spot we are now, and it's beautiful. And we also got a grant, a community building partnership grant, for putting in carpet and refurbishing the bench tops and building a wall down the back. So that was the next year. So we got in there, we got it going, we had this old carpet which took quite a bit of cleaning, but we made it work, and then we've got new carpet. And today, look, people walk in. I mean, some locals come by monthly because, of course, we change the exhibition monthly. So it's always an ever-changing landscape of art and of local artists. But you get travellers who come through from all over, you know, because we're that stopping place in between. And people walk in and go, oh, the feeling in this place is just lovely, isn't it? And they come in and it's like, oh, local art? Oh, yes, it's all local artists. It's all a membership. There's about 120 members. And so there's a variety of those on show at all times. And it's filled with art. And I think there's a sense of peace when you walk in there, because we kept it a little bit more like a gallery where there's an openness to the space.
So just tell me, how much is membership per year?
For a practicing artist, exhibiting artist, it's $40 a year. Cheap as chips, hey? And just as a support member, it's about $25.
Very affordable. Now, just to remind the listeners, mm-hmm. and people who listen in on this podcast when it gets podcasted, this is not NERAM.
This is not NERAM. This is the New England Art Society, and it's the Armidale Art Gallery, and it's in the mall, and it's a totally not-for-profit organisation run completely by volunteer members for the showcasing of local art. It was begun in about 95 by a group of local artists who had a bright idea to collectively showcase their art and then encourage other people and more art. And so it's developed over the years. But interestingly enough, when I went back through a couple of years ago, we found all the historical records. When we moved house, of course, you find the boxes in the attic. And we went through all of those, and I could see in the very, very early meetings there was this concept of having a place to showcase local artists in the mall. And it probably took 20 years to get down on the street in the mall, and it's successful. It is a really successful enterprise.
So you just might mention, you've got a team of people behind you because it's a volunteer organisation. It's a community-run, non-profit organisation. Mm-hmm. You're the president.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me some of the others?
Yeah, okay. So there's a committee of eight at the moment, and the vice president is Philippa Charlie Briggs. Shirley Cook is the treasurer. Lorraine Kelleher is the secretary, and then we have Andrea Gledhill, Shirley Tier, Ros Brady, and Sue Fisher. I'm the ring in. They've all been here a long time, so they know the local thing. Both Andrea and Philippa have been the ex-curators of NERAM. So, and besides, then there is probably another 20 people who are actively involved in some way or another, like facilitating the desk. So that's all, there's probably about 12 people, maybe more, who do a shift on the desk and keep the place running. And so they're the face-to-face, day-to-day workers who help. And then we have, of course, like yesterday, we rehung the whole gallery. So the committee, mostly it's a committee with a few other members. It's a pretty good, we've got a bit of an A-team these days after having done it for so many years, where we come down and we can revamp that gallery pretty well in a day, because the different people have got different jobs in it, and we kind of know our different roles, and we just get on with it. And you come in today, it looks very different to what it looked like on Monday.
So 2 points for me. Andrea Gledhill.
Yeah.
She introduced me to art.
Oh, did she?
Yeah, uh-huh. So she had a little gallery upstairs above the bank in the mall.
Uh-huh.
And I'd go up there at lunchtimes and dabble in paint. So she introduced me to that. The other thing is I'm a firm believer that if there is an organisation, particularly a non-profit organisation, that is successful, people want to be... So there's the art that attracts people, but being a successful organisation is also an attractive thing. People don't want to get tied up with something that's actually a bit ho-hum and not being successful. But if you've got an organisation that is effective, it's got nice people, it is running well, and it is run well by your organisation, that actually attracts more people.
You know, I would agree, actually, because our membership has increased quite strongly since we've been downstairs and it's become successful. And there have been times, I think, over the many years where, particularly when it was upstairs for a while, that there was a point where it was floundering and it was there was a bit of a drive, you know, like, does it close, does it keep going? And then a new surge happened. Now, that's before my time. But, you know, people stepped in and got the place up and going, and then upon that is built more. But it does take people power, and it is about people putting their hands up. But I think there's a really good thing about working with people for some... Like, if you're passionate about art, if you love art, which I do, I get just as... Well, I love selling my own art, but I get a supreme bit of joy every time somebody's art sells through that gallery. That when you can tell someone, and someone says, oh, you've just made my day. It's just a fantastic thing that people are sharing aspects of themselves, putting it out for show, and then another person comes along and goes, wow, I'll have that. I'll take it home. Now, the art travels everywhere. We've sent it all over Australia, and we have people, and overseas too, because a lot of prints have gone overseas. But people pop by, they want something from Armidale, they'll pop in. So what we've also developed is a lot of small stuff. So it's not just the big art on the walls that's all got hundreds of dollars price tags on it, although some of it's a bit cheaper, but there are some, you know, large pieces of work up to about $2,000. So you've got this big range. But we have jewellery, we have books, we have a lot of ceramics, we have what I call the smaller items, and all still produced locally. There's a constant supply of that, so people can come in and get probably anything for any budget at the gallery.
And also a token that they've visited Armidale.
A token, absolutely. We have cards. All the cards that we sell particularly are made by local artists. So whether they're photos, whether they're hand-drawn, whether they're pictures of artwork reproduced into cards, it's all local work. So even all of that, so we sell hundreds of cards. We take very little profit from the cards because we see it as just bread and butter money for artists, really. But it's also that token, people at the post office across the road, come and get a card, send your gift. We've got little gift cards to bigger cards to photo prints. Yeah, that token that people can take something back with them is fantastic.
So, question is whether you're a practicing artist, someone who has done art in the past and would like to rekindle, or a total newcomer, but as always said, when I retire, I want to do some art, or if I've got time, I want to do some art. What could any of those people expect if they came and joined the Art Society? What sort of activities do you have?
Well, it's a hard one because I think everybody has a different expectation of what they want. But so we try and provide quite a lot of different things. There are art classes down there for beginners. There's art classes for intermediate, both in painting at this stage, and there's probably some more coming along the way. We have openings monthly. We have, odd to say it, but we have working bees, and there's nothing like a community working bee to create a sense of connection. We have a few events outside of, like we're now putting on a marquee down at the Black Gully Festival so that people can find us and talk and interact, and we do a kids' sort of tent for playing with art. We run a retreat, an annual retreat, Well, actually, there was an annual retreat that was run for many years. And then during COVID, of course, that became a very difficult thing to do. And so that all stopped. And so last year, we ran our first retreat. We did try the year before, but there were problems at the venue. Their internal sewerage works went into disrepair, so we had to cancel. So we went back this year, last year, and right now, as of Saturday, tomorrow, there's a new exhibition opening, which is called Forest, Farmland and Fog, which is artist's response to that retreat. So we took a group down to Two Sticks, which is next door to the New England National Park, and it was a really wet weekend. If you remember last year, we had all that build up to, oh, it's going to be a drought, it's going to be a drought, and then it rained. Well, we happened to go down there and it rained all weekend. We got some sun, so we did go out some walking, but people took, you know, a lot back, and a group of five of us who were some of the people who went on the retreat have put together an exhibition. And we're planning the next retreat, which is at Kiambal National Park, which is just north of Inverell, to try a different spot in a lovely big homestead and a group of artists all getting together for 3 days.
Kiambal's a fantastic place to do a retreat.
Right. I've never been there, so I'm quite excited.
No, it's a fantastic place. Both the vegetation, the bird life, fish in the river, but also when you get down to the falls and the McIntyre, fantastic place to be. So we might actually tie it up now. So the Armidale Art Society is it's like any other organisation, but if things are going well and you can keep them going well with a really strong, passionate group of people, which I think you've got, and you've got the location in the mall across from the post office. I often go in there, you know, every week or so and just have a chat to Lorraine or whoever's on the
desk.
And you've got art classes?
Art classes. We've also got things like a miniature show. So Judy Wilford, who was a long-term member of the gallery who passed a year and a half ago, she was an advocate for miniature art. She used to win lots of prizes, of course, across Australia. And so we've renamed it the Judy Wilford Miniature Show, and that's on in a couple of months. And in that, we encourage all our members to have a go at a miniature piece of work and put it on. There's no cost. It's a really, like, we look for ways to encourage people to have a go. We did Wasted a couple of years ago, which was all about recycling and art and how that works, and we'll be putting that on again at some stage next year, I think. We have art prizes. We have summer shows. So there's some ways of getting money, which distributes more money, prize money to artists. And, yeah, so the opportunities are having. And just as a point of interest, we've got Crossing New England 2004, which is also an exhibition. It's an invited artist exhibition facilitated by Anna Henderson and Philippa Charlie Briggs this year that also used to happen, went for 5 years back in the 2010s-ish time, and we're doing a revisited. So we'll be filling the gallery with invited artists from outside, or some local, but some from outside the area, to also give our locals the opportunity to see professional artists' work and to give the local community an opportunity to see that as well.
So let's go back to how do I become a member? You've got a web page.
Website, armidaleartgallery.com.
And can you download the application form to become a member?
Yes. It's best probably, look, it's best to come in, really. Come in the door, talk to someone, they fill it out. We're pretty low tech, I would say, because a lot of our, because we have so many volunteer staff, it sort of happens at the desk a lot. You can ring up, you can pay for things over the phone, that all works, that's no problem. You can do things online, but we don't have forms filled out online. So if you've sent the form in, you've still got to either BSB or, you know, direct deposit funds, or ring up and do it over the phone. But it is a very personal thing, because you want to be in the gallery to see what it is, to meet people there and then become a member.
So you're suggesting if you've got an idea, if you've got any thoughts or any interest in doing some art, come into the gallery, meet the group of people, apply, make your application.
And look, the best time to come in, there is a person at desk who can give you details, but the best times to come in are at the openings. If you come to the openings, most of the committee are there, lots of the really active members are there, people will have a chat with you. If you've got questions, you'll see the diversity of people who are there and have an experience of what it's like on a collective level.
And to find out when the openings are, they're on your webpage.
Yep.
And you've got a Facebook page.
Yes, Facebook, which is also Armidale Art Gallery. It's actually the New England Art Society and the Armidale Art Gallery. But we pretty well just go by the Armidale Art Gallery because NIAS, as we refer to the society, is sort of like the background body that runs it. So it's really, we often just say it's the gallery. So Armidale Art Gallery, webpage, Facebook, or come in.
Just come in. Well, Tess, this has been a great, great time. We spent virtually an hour. It's going to be podcasted. Thank you very much for coming in. And I'm sure that you'll continue to be successful because you've got this great group of people.
It's fantastic.
Around you.
Yeah, yeah. It is really, really about the people, working with good people.
Okay, Tess, thanks again. And you've been part of Community Spotlight this Friday. And watch out for the podcast.
Thank you, Herb.
Broadcast, then podcast. If you missed it or want to hear it again, then visit our webpage, 2arm.net.au/podcast.
I listen to 2ARM, 92.1 FM, in the car and at work, for great tunes and community news.